Hello and welcome to the Legal & General Communication Swap Shop, where I'm speaking with leaders of small businesses and also today the leader of a mental health movement. In all these interviews, we're sharing stories and considering how to use communication to create the conditions for positive and motivated work and working environments, the kind of work that actually helps create a feeling of well-being. And I'm thrilled to be joined today by Jeff McDonald, co-founder of the Minds at Work movement and former Global VP of Human Resources at Unilever. Minds at Work describe themselves as a community of learners with the purpose of inspiring and equipping individuals to eradicate the stigma of mental illness and create workplaces that are life-enhancing. But instead of me quoting from the website, let's hear from the man behind the movement. Jeff, welcome. Please, can you just tell me a bit more about Minds at Work and how you came to co-found this movement?
Yeah, I suppose it's all around my own passion in trying to address the stigma of mental ill health in workplaces. That's where it all emanates from. And that passion comes as a result of while I was working for Unilever back in 2008, after a 20-year career at that stage, doing a big job looking after all of our HR function across the home care division in Unilever. One evening, I woke up in the middle of the night with a massive panic attack. And that was the beginnings of 3 months off work with anxiety-fueled depression. Now, when I was diagnosed with my illness, as I walked out of the doctor's rooms, I made a decision not to be burdened by the stigma of depression. And that decision saved my life in many ways because it allowed me to talk about my illness to my daughters, who were 10 and 7 at the time, to my wife, to some of my close friends, to some of my colleagues at work. And you know, Suzanne, what I got back from them, which kept me going in my darkest, darkest moments, was probably the most powerful emotion in the world. And it's called love. And in my darkest moments, just knowing that I was loved by these people is what kept me going.
Yeah.
Together with the second emotion, which was a sense of hope. I used to meet with a colleague of mine every 10 days who had been very ill with depression 2 years prior. And I used to meet with Martin, and you know what I saw? I saw he was better, and he gave me so much hope. And so a combination of feeling loved and a sense of hope were probably the two most powerful ingredients that contributed to my recovery back in 2008. I went back into Unilever. I then had another 6 years working for them. But then in 2012, I lost a very, very good friend to suicide. And he was an alpha male. He was a typical South African. And he just couldn't talk about his mental and emotional struggles. And I lay in bed that night, the night he died, and I thought to myself, what's the difference between him and me? And you know, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a therapist, but I just came to a very simple conclusion. And the conclusion I came to was I'd been able to talk and I'd been able to experience this outpouring of love and hope, and he couldn't. And instead, he took his own life. And that was the catalyst, which then led me to do a piece of work in Unilever. I co-led a piece of work around breaking stigma. And then I left Unilever in 2014 to go out into the world and help organizations address the stigma of mental ill health. And during that journey, after about 6 months, I met up with a lady called Georgie Mack, and we I also had a number of people coming to me and talking to me about how they wanted to contribute to breaking the stigma of mental ill health in their workplaces. And I thought, instead of trying to talk to all these individuals, why don't I just bring those individuals together as a group? And so Georgie and I chose a date which was suitable to myself and her, an evening. And we brought about 10 people together in her offices on Regent's Canal. And that was the beginning of this network called Minds at Work. And, you know, over the years, it's grown to over 2,500 people who are part of the network. And, you know, it's a movement / charity. We got charitable status a couple of years ago. And yes, as you said in the introduction, you know, its purpose is to try and inspire, equip individuals to go back into their workplaces, address the stigma of mental ill health, and try and create workplaces that are truly life-enhancing for people rather than diminishing people's lives.
Yeah, that's
kind of how I got into it all.
Yeah, and how, what kind of support do you provide to leaders to achieve that? I noticed on your website, one section that particularly piqued my interest was a page called Stories Save Lives. Is it about sharing? You told me what led you to co-found Minds at Work there, and it sounds like it is about sharing. It's about sharing vulnerabilities. Tell me a bit more about that.
So in the early stages, and we've evolved it now, but in the early stages, for the first 3 or 4 years, there was a real focus on inspiring and equipping individuals to go back into their workplace and start this conversation. And we use storytelling as the means of inspiring. We use storytelling as the means of equipping individuals. So we would run 4 or 5 events a year of an evening hosted by an organization. They would put it on for us for free. They would give us a venue. They'd give us some drinks. And we would just have people coming in. And we would select various leaders from different organizations, just ordinary individuals, and they would just come in and share their stories. And stories about their crucible moments in life, but also stories about how they had then gone back into their workplaces and got the conversation going. And it was, that was about inspiring and equipping. But then, it became clear to us also, or to me in particular, that, leaders in organizations will only care for their employees' well-being, their mental health, if they care for their own well-being and their own mental health.
And so
in a conversation with Poppy Jamin, who used to, who was very much the leader of the City Mental Health Alliance, was very involved in mental health first aid for England. She was the CEO. I remember having a lunch with her one day, and I said to her, Poppy, you've got this thing called the City Mental Health Alliance, and it provides that kind of service to big organizations where leaders can come, they can learn from one another, they can be provoked about looking after their own mental health. But what's happening to the SME community? Where's there a place for small and medium-sized enterprises to go? And she said, well, Jeff, why don't you try and provide that kind of service from Minds at Work? And so over the last 2 years, we've really tried to build that capability where we will work with an organization, an SME, and try and work with their people and their leaders to really think about this whole concept of their well-being. Because I honestly believe that if we can help them to improve their own well-being and they can then start role modeling some of those practices, they'll really care for the well-being of their people and truly, truly begin to enhance the lives of individuals who work for a small, medium-sized enterprise.
That's absolutely key, isn't it? And as part of this series, I've spoken with 2 leaders of small businesses, both entrepreneurs, both wearing lots and lots of hats. They're very driven individuals. They're working long hours. And it's all that is part and parcel of what it takes to build a small business, isn't it? But at some point, especially when they've taken on employees and built a team, they need to step back, don't they? They need to take that step back and consider the image that they're projecting to others. And there's probably not a lot of room for work-life balance there. So yeah, I'm also interested to note that you have something called The Hive. And I assume that The Hive is somewhere where leaders of small businesses, the kind of people I've been speaking to, can come together to help them focus on their well-being. Perhaps you can tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, exactly. So what we've been prototyping and working out, and we've run it for a couple of organizations now, and very, very grateful to Legal & General for the sponsorship of our next Hive. But essentially, it's exactly that. It's a 7 to 9 week program, it's usually run, 2 or 3 hours over the 7 or 9 weeks. And what we do is we use, those 2 or 3 hours for those individuals, that community, to come together and to learn some skills and some capabilities on how to enhance and look after their well-being. But also the other thing that comes out of The Hive is a tremendous sense of community and peer support. So these individuals are also learning peer support skills, and how they can support one another in their quest to enhance their overall well-being. You know, the other day I was on a panel, and the chair of the panel, you know, we were introducing ourselves, and I said to him, look, maybe I could take a bit of time to introduce myself. And he said, yeah, sure, but don't take too much time because I know all about you. I said, how do you know? He said, I've just been on a Hive. I've just been on your Hive program. And he said, you know what I did last Saturday? I ran my first half marathon. It's transformed my life. It's transformed my life. And that's the idea, is to really give these individuals that opportunity to protect and look after what I often say is the most valuable thing in our lives. And that's our health, our well-being.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we've spoken about leadership and about role modeling and the importance of leaders putting their own oxygen masks on first. And you've told, then when it comes to the wider workforce, obviously all of that impacts on the wider workforce, but you've told me previously you're on a mission to put well-being in the boardroom. Why do you think it needs to be there as opposed to sitting with HR, for example?
Yeah, you know, Suzanne, and you're a communications expert, so language for me is so, so important. And over the last couple of years, I've tried to almost shift some of the language that I would use in a boardroom. And I use the word well-being less now. But let me tell you why. Because what I've noticed over the last 9 years as I've been on this journey is that the most limiting resource that I see in workplaces today, irrespective of which part of the world we're in, irrespective of the sector that I'm working in, the most limiting resource that I see in workplaces today is the energy of people. People are frazzled. They can't wait for a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And they don't really love a Monday morning. All right. They are frazzled. And I honestly believe that the most critical enabler of performance is a person's energy. When people are energized and passionate about something and they're in the flow, they give of their best. They sure give of their best. And, you know, we cannot be energized if we are not healthy. If we're not healthy physically, emotionally, mentally, and have a sense of purpose and meaning in our lives. And so if the energy of your people, which is driven by their health, is such a critical enabler of performance, then why is it not a strategic priority in the boardroom? Because every other strategic priority in the boardroom is about driving and enhancing the performance of that organization or institution. And so we should elevate the health of our people, the well-being of our people, to being a strategic imperative, because it's the most critical enabler of performance. And then what happened is we had COVID. And look what happened in COVID. When people weren't healthy, look what happened to certain industries, how they had to were decimated, you know. And so I think this concept of, you know, there's this thought out there that kind of says, okay, we must do a bit of well-being, and that is divorced from the performance of our organization. It's not. It's completely, completely entwined. And it, I would argue, it's probably the most critical enabler. You can have all these strategic priorities, but if people don't feel energized and healthy, they won't deliver those strategic priorities. So let's make it an imperative in the boardroom.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, we've spoken about this before this interview, I know, and I think we're both of the opinion that leaders in many organizations, particularly the bigger ones, so perhaps this isn't as much the case for smaller businesses, but you tell me, but leaders in many organizations are impeded by the very system, the policies and procedures in which they operate. So with that in mind, how do organizations, and SMEs in particular, shift the culture so that their employees are energized?
Yeah, look, I think, and I love the fact that you've asked the question around shifting the culture to create an organization where people's lives are enhanced and people feel energized, because I am so critical of well-being weeks, you know, where we have a week called the well-being week, and I care for you for 1 week of the year, and then I flog you to death for the other 51 weeks of the year. Or I have a few bananas next to the till in the canteen. Guess what? We now care for our employees' well-being.
Oh, yeah. You know? Jeff, we're totally on the same page on that one. And a mental health day. And you just think, well, they're coming back to all the same issues that were they've taken a day, they've walked the dog, they've probably cleared their heads, and now straight back into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think if you want to shift the culture of an organization, and this comes from my own HR experience, you know, working for Unilever for 25 years in HR, I think that there are two critical levers that you've got to shift. The first one is you've got to have leaders who are going to role model this stuff. Leaders mm-hmm. who believe intensely in the importance of healthy employees to drive the performance of the organization. And they themselves are role modeling it, and they are expecting that of their employees to do the same. So leadership behavior, absolutely critical. But then the other element that is critical is to also then look within the organization and what are some of the ways of working that we are going to have to change? What are some of the systems, the processes, the policies that are causing stress on people? And so I think if there's a combination of being prepared to audit your organization and understand what are some of the systems, the processes, and the policies that are causing stress, how do we shift those? How do we change those? We have a bunch of leaders who are now beginning to role model this, talk about it. Whenever they communicate, they are, you know, they're communicating the importance of this strategic priority. We've got the right kind of financial and human resource behind the strategic priority. And we have a framework in place, and we have resources that people can draw on. And when I say resources that people can draw on to enhance their physical health, to enhance their mental health, their emotional health.
Yeah.
And I think if we get that right, and we've addressed the stigma of mental ill health, but I think if an organization can take some accountability to shift the ways of working, to put some measures in place around well-being, to drive different leadership behaviors, address the stigma of mental ill health, and then make sure that resources are available that employees can draw on. You know, Suzanne, we've done it well around physical health. We have benefit schemes where I give you a ride to work scheme, or I give you a gym membership. You know, we've done it for many, many years to try and enhance individuals' physical health. But we need to lift our game now and also provide resources to enhance people's emotional, mental health, and also create a sense of purpose and meaning for people going to work. And I think if you can do all of that, and that takes time, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. But if you can address those aspects or those levers, I think in time you begin to shift the culture of the organization and create a place which is truly life enhancing.
Yeah, yeah. That is a perfect place to end, Jeff. I could ask you lots more questions. I feel like we're really on the same wavelength on this subject, but I'm sad to say we're going to have to end there. But it's been great talking to you, as always. And I'm sure you've shared lots of food for thought for listeners there. So thank you so much for your time, Jeff. Have a good day.
Wonderful. Thank you, Suzanne. And thanks for hosting our conversation today. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
For a chance to win a day's internal communication consultancy, including follow-up actions and recommendations, enter our competition now. The competition is open to SMEs employing 50 to 250 employees. For more information, go to legalandgeneral.com/betterwellbeingcompetition.